Yo, let me rip it first.
Go ahead, B.
Yo. Thank you for taking a ride on the Freedom Train, your community resource podcast series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and ride with me is my main man, Mr. Patrick Irvin. Remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with a trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. And don't forget, while you're on the website, click on the tab that says The Code so you can order your Black the Way You Came calendars that comes equipped with 12 codes of conduct to help for black social engineering, to help the black community work more as a community, and black history facts. While you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com so you can learn more about myself, Patrick, Jamie, and the Freedom Train vision as a whole. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. On Twitter, we are Freedom Train Net, and on Instagram, we are Freedom Train Network. Make sure you like us, like our Freedom Train Network Facebook page, and also either subscribe to the Freedom Train on Google Play Music or iTunes, and you can get the episodes coming directly to your phone. Pat, what up? Jamie in here. Jamie in the house. What's up, fellas? How y'all doing?
What's going on, man?
What's up? What's up? What's up? Pat.
What's happening?
What happened to the freestyle, man?
You, right when I was finna go in, you was like, welcome to the Freedom Train. I was like, all right, then.
So you weren't aggressive enough, man. Jamie,
no,
man, he...
Man, look, I'm not one of these new school guys. I know how to hold a beat. I got rhythm. I know when to come
Pat,
in.
And Pat trash. Let's just put it out there. Pat's trash.
Hey, man, if you're going to be over 30 and start your rap career, you got to be aggressive, okay?
Hey, look, first off, Rickety Ross was like 33 when he started stealing stories from the inmates. And,
but he was, he was aggressive with it, though.
Oh, whatever. Anyway, hey. This ain't even supposed to be about me. Who we got?
Hey, man, today, on our show today, we got a good brother. He is the man in the city right now. He's somebody that's highly sought after. Everybody's talking about him because of the effort, the passion, and the quality of work that his business brings to the Tallahassee community, helping black businesses, small businesses, all types of businesses grow and flourish, and teaching them the way. I know with me, helping me with the SEO stuff, getting better at that. My man, Brian Keith Wyatt Jr., and he's a jack of all trades, has many talents, many things, but he's more so known for his marketing genius. He's a marketing expert. So, Brian, how you doing today, my brother?
Very good. How are you?
We are great. Thank you for being on the train with us today.
Most definitely. Glad to be here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We want to go ahead and let our audience know more about you and your excellent services that you and your company, Be Easy Graphics, bring to the table. So we're not going to hold people up any longer. Pat, you know you got the first question. Let's kick this thing off.
All right. So the first question absolutely has to be, who are you?
I am anything. Pat, man, I'm a veteran, social entrepreneur, marketing expert, and a chef, as well as the founding president and CEO of Be Easy Graphics.
Yes, sir.
You're a veteran of, first off, thank you for your, you know what, I hate when, because I'm a vet too, and I hate when people say thank you for your service, but you feel obligated to say it. But
man,
go ahead.
But I kind of hate it too, bro.
It really bothers me. But, you know, I'm going to say it anyway, because if I don't say it, they're going to be like they don't love the veteran. But I know how you feel on the other end receiving it.
Yeah.
So thank you for your service.
Thank you for your support.
All right, Jamie, this is where you're supposed to jump in, too.
All right, cool. So Be Easy Graphics is the name of your multimedia marketing agency. How did you become a marketing expert, and why did you choose, you know, to do your own marketing agency? Like, what was your passion that driving you to go do all these things?
Well, many people don't fully understand what marketing is. A lot of people think it's just sales or advertising. But it's all of those, and when people don't understand it, then they don't know what options to explore to grow their business, and so they start wasting money and throwing money at the wrong marketing solution. Well, I started my business to help make marketing easy and affordable by offering a single source solution for the full range of marketing services in order to help them develop strategies within their budget to grow their business.
Hey, man, I just like the passion that you're talking with when you're talking about your business. That's how we know you really care about what you're doing. So
you said the full gamut of marketing. Can you give us a little bit more in terms of, like, what all marketing really entails for those people that are listening and they suck at marketing like I do, and they're not sure what you're talking about.
Right.
So okay, how about this? You like food, though, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, you like pie?
Yes, I like pie.
Sweet potato
right,
pie.
I like pie. So I'll use pie as an example, right? Let's say grandma made this fresh apple pie, and she told you that we can split it 50-50. But I'm hungry, though, so I want the whole pie. But in order to get more pie, I have to convince grandma that she should give me more pie. That's what marketing is. How are you going to convince the marketplace that they should buy more into your business than any other? And if it were me, I'd be telling grandma that I've been a good boy. I'll remind her that I'm a favorite grandson, and to believe that if she gave me more pie, then I'd be strong enough and have enough energy to help her do housework. Now, giving me some more pie has more value than it does to give it to you. That's good marketing and branding.
Okay.
Got you. So to simplify that, good marketing is telling grandma to give you more pie for you 86. Got you.
Well, you crazy. So how did you become a marketing expert? Like, what led you to where you are now with the level of knowledge and expertise as far as when it comes to marketing?
Well, I started a long time ago, back in 2004. So I was really serving a need. At that time, I just got kicked out of college, man. It was a struggle back then. And I was broke, and I needed some money. So the main skills that I had was graphic and web design. And so I would go door-to-door to businesses and ask them if I could help design them a new logo or website. And they told me, you know, hey, sure, if you're going to only charge $50, $75, like, if you're going to help grow my business, I'll do it. I'll invest in it. And so they believed in me enough to pay the few coins that they did, and I did a really good job, and I didn't realize that I was saving them a lot of money, because on the other side of it, the larger competitors were charged $1,500 plus for the services that I was going for $57.5. So the money that they saved, they started creating jobs, giving back to the community, and that's what got me motivated. It's like, oh, wow, if I could help them keep their costs low, then it's going to have a positive social impact. And so marketing became my passion, because it's not just for me. It's not just to feed my household, but it could feed the whole community.
Okay. Because when it comes to marketing, it seems, I know for me, I you know, let people know I'm no expert at marketing. I'm doing my best to learn as much. But it seems as if, you know, you'll read information in this book, you read stuff in this book, and everybody has contrasting information. So as far as sources, what are the best sources for people to seek to, if they are trying to learn marketing on their own, or if they're trying to read up more on their own, in your opinion? What are some good sources?
The best sources that I would recommend is for people who are offering a similar product or service, kind of read on their history and what they did that worked and didn't work, because that's the best way to go about it. for example, I can't, if I want to start selling clothing and be a department store, I can't study Target because they're a big box store, and what works for them won't work for me. I need to go to places like, you know, smaller fashion stores, mom-and-pop shops, ask them, you know, how they grew up and how they got their store with the clientele and the city officials coming in to buy new suits. How'd you build that up? What'd you do? And by studying them, you can learn some of the best practices. But then there are also tons of resources online, like HubSpot offers like free marketing tips that you can download a marketing strategy for them, try it out, and if it doesn't work, you just go to the next one. So there's a lot of free resources out there that you could try. You just got to know where to look.
Cool. Appreciate that.
You know what? I like you offered the Girl Scout approach to business. I'm familiar with that because that's how I started my first business in Tallahassee, was going door to door. But yep. It's something you don't hear of a lot, so it's real interesting to hear you talk about that. How did you come into that line of thinking, or was that something that just seemed natural to you? Because I ask because most of the people I talk to that have started their own businesses, when you bring up the Girl Scout approach, they're just like, what? Well, that doesn't work. Why would I go door-to-door, business-to-business when I can do so many other more efficient things?
Well, a lot of people probably weren't raised the way that I was, too. I'm from the south side of Chicago, you know.
Okay.
According to statistics, I'm not even supposed to be here.
Mm-hmm.
On the south side of Chicago, where there's an average of, what, 82 shootings a week, and 75% of those murdered are black men. It was dangerous to go door-to-door back then, but when you're hungry, you know, you don't have the resources to take care of what's in your household, you're going to do what it takes to get out there and get it. And so that hustler spirit is what got me to go door-to-door. I couldn't have left that only by growing up in hard times, and I think that's what a lot of people are missing. A lot of people try to avoid challenges instead of seeing the lessons that they can learn by going through them.
That's
now, with just that door-to-door approach, because I dabble a little bit in the marketing, I'm still trying to learn a lot. So I think a lot of people going directly to the customer, now that we have all this technology, that art of having and building that personal relationship, knocking on the door, them seeing your face and building that foundation, a lot of people go away from that. Everything's online. They figure if I can just cast a huge net and suck up all these people, that's better than me going out there and actually meeting and greeting the people and being part of that community. So the fact that you mentioned that, I think that's really important. And, you know, some people it may work and some people it may not, but that interaction, I like what you said there. That's dope.
Amen.
You're absolutely right. And when it comes to digital marketing, what a lot of people will start to see, and it may not happen now, but you're going to see a trend of online businesses failing, is because they're recruiting people who are promiscuous buyers. And what that means is they're going to buy the lowest price thing with no strings attached. But then if someone comes along and offers something better, or even if it's more expensive but you get more with it, they're going to go back to that buyer. There's no loyalty in the marketplace. But when you do that door-to-door, when you set up a meeting with the clients, meet them face-to-face, shake their hand, get a feel for their body language, their spirit, their vibe, you know, you start to build customer and brand loyalty, and that's where the true value is.
Good.
Thank you.
Building that rapport, that's key.
Give them a round of applause or something. Where the studio audience at? They all fired again?
Yeah, you fired them, remember?
Oh,
you fired everybody. You fired the man with the little shirt. We had this one dude in a little small shirt, but you, hey, man. So we'll get him back, though. Don't worry. He's coming. I'll call him up.
My fault. I'm sorry. But that deserves a round, because I may suck at marketing, but I'm pretty decent at understanding the concept of brand loyalty and networking and building relationships. And what you just said needs to be echoed so many times and so in as many different ways as it can be echoed. Because that is what's really missing from the marketplace nowadays is any sort of relationship between a company or a business and the consumers. Now it's just you buy from me because I offer you the lowest price. But, you know what I'm saying, there's no loyalty there. So if somebody comes behind you with a lower price, then I'm going to go with them. Whereas you look at, like, Apple, they release the same phone every year, virtually the exact same phone, but people keep going to get the new one because they're loyal to Apple. You got these wars starting up, Android versus Apple, and all of that is spurred by brand loyalty. It's an amazing thing. They have a relationship with these corporations, and half of them don't even realize it. But that is so powerful, what you just said. It's so that. What did we hire? We holding interviews for anybody listening?
Whatever. But you see, you making me just. I got all type of questions flowing through my head, and I'm trying. We're trying not to have you on here all day, but because it's just the way you're saying you're giving a lot of great information. But you also believe in growing small businesses. So, for you personally, why is growing small businesses a passion of yours, and how do you actually help these businesses grow?
I suppose it's my way of paying it forward. You know, it was a small business that cut me my first break, because back when I was homeless and going door to door, there was this one gentleman who gave me my first contract. It was for maybe $300 or $400 per month. In spite of what I was going through, he said, "You know what? You always come with a professional appearance. You have a great attitude. In spite of your challenges, you look so easy." And he started calling me Be Easy, and that became my nickname ever since then. And okay. He was loyal to me, and he would only come to me when he needed graphics or web, in spite of having underbidders. Even when I raised my price on him, he would still come back to me. And I was able to get back on my feet. I had my first child, and I used the money from that to bring her up. And so I was like, wow, man, is this what it's like down on this level? Why do I need a career when I can have really good friendships and customers like this? So, and I want other small businesses to have that kind of same experience where they have someone who's willing to lower their prices, do some mentoring and coaching to help bring them up so that they can keep paying it forward and forward. And that's my vision. And a lot of people might say it's naive, but I believe that there's still a lot of good people out there, good entrepreneurs who believe in paying it forward.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I mean, so if I was starting a business today, what steps would I need to take to ensure, you know, I got a good clientele, I'm priced well in my market range, and my brand is something noticeable? So somebody that's starting out fresh, trying to get a leg up in the game, what advice could you give to them?
My advice would be to start with a strong brand. Like, I'm talking about the visuals, as well as the perception, building a strong relationship, which is something we talked about earlier. When you have a strong relationship with people, they're going to start building a really strong referral network to where even if all the advertising, all the marketing you did didn't pay off, you still have 5 or 6 people that are bringing you 2 customers a month. And that's going to keep your water bills paid. You know what I'm saying? So one of the ways to do that I often recommend to people that a lot of people don't really consider most times is to consider bartering for services in kind or products in kind, and just say, hey, look, I'm going to give this to you if you just write me a 5-star review, or if you give me, you know, this for free, we'll exchange it and promote each other. And a lot of people don't just see the value of what you're offering in exchange. They see that you're willing to extend a handout to help save them some money. And that goes a really, really long way when it comes to loyalty and building customer relationships.
Basically, perpetuation is one of the key things with people who are really starting out, being able to have other people that you're doing business with, even if it's small time, even if it's a few clientele, be able to perpetuate to other people to kind of grow that central base of clientele.
That's right.
All right, cool. I can do
that. And reciprocity. Uh-huh.
That's it.
You trying to one-up me on big words today, Pat?
Yeah.
All right. Let me get my dictionary.
The thesaurus.
Go ahead and get some words out.
I mean, get that little SAT box with them cards in it, man. Go ahead and get them and slap them down when you say your word.
You always trying to one-up me, Pat.
Usually I'm messing with Joe. This is like my first or second time with you. Come on, Jamie.
I don't like that.
He keeping count.
I've been practicing that word all week, man. Come on, dog. Hey.
My bad. I take it back. My bad.
You crazy, man.
So, it's my turn, ain't it, Joe, to ask a question?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, man. You good.
No,
I forgot what I was going to ask the man.
Whatever.
You talk to him all the time.
Man, go ahead.
Nah. Anyways, so what would you say have been, I'd say, the three most important things for you in terms of being able to sustain your business and your success for as long as you have? I know you mentioned a lot of things over the course of answering the previous questions and whatnot, but what would you say have been the three most important?
I would say faith, fear, and discipline. Well, faith first, because I believe that there was no way I could have overcome many of the challenges that I did without my faith in God and Him calling me to be a co-creator, because that helped keep me going through some things that I didn't think I could get out of. But alternatively, on the other side of the spectrum, I'm also motivated by fear. All the things that I'm afraid of, I have a tenacity to go after so that I can overcome that fear. For example, I was scared for about 12, 13 years to step out and work my business full time, because I was so used to having security of working a full time job with benefits. But I stepped out on that fear last October, and it was probably the best decision that I've ever made. But it didn't come easy. I had to get up early. I had to go to sleep late. And that's where discipline comes in. You have to make yourself do things that you don't feel like doing. You have to rise above your circumstances and be more than what you expect yourself to be. Because without those three, without motivation, without faith, and without discipline, you're just going to be an average Joe. No offense, Joe.
Yeah, Joe. Even the guests insulting you.
Whatever. Hey, man. They made a lot of things around my name that, you know, I'm trying to change these perceptions. So, you know, it's all good.
Trader Joe's.
Sloppy Joe's, all that. That ain't cool. So.
Sloppy Joe.
But those are great motivators, and I think that people have to learn to find what motivates them to go down their particular path that they're passionate about, and not allowing others. Because did you have people who were telling you not to step out on your own? And if so, how were you able to find the strength within yourself to trust yourself?
Actually, when I was in my previous marriage, when I was married, my ex-wife would tell me not to.
Mm-hmm.
But my current wife, Sierra Wyatt, encouraged me. And in fact, she's my executive assistant. She's been supporting me. She's the one that sends people their invoices. So
<They're> cool.
She's more happy to stand behind me, and been a blessing ever since. But other than that, no, I didn't really tell too many people that's what I was going to do. I'm glad to have had the support that I did, and I'm glad I kept most of those very intimate decisions close to the hip, because you can't share everything with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, there are some dream catchers and some dream killers out there.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Full gamut. Catchers, right. Killers, stealers.
Yep.
Yeah. You see that, though? You need a partner. Joe, I keep telling you, you need a partner. Not now, Brian has said it. You need a partner.
Hey, man, I'm trying to get married, though, so.
I wasn't talking about a partner. Like, although there's nothing better than a supportive woman that's willing to do whatever. But, you know, you could just have a homie that's down for the team, that's got time and is willing to do it.
No, that don't sound right, Pat.
I disagree. I'm talking about business partner. I ain't talking about First off, I don't have nothing against the homosexual community.
It's just the way you said it.
There you go.
You didn't got to take it that far. It's just the way you said it. That's
no,
all.
No.
Hey, you done made him put out his disclaimer.
Yeah, it's just the way you said it. That's all.
Hey,
man, I had to get you back for shutting my word down, dog. So.
Okay, you got 2 points.
2 points. Score 2 for Jay.
Whatever. But Brian, like you... One thing that I really love about what you do is you are a strong advocate for the businesses and the communities working together. So, why is it important for businesses to advocate and help support and build up the communities that they reside in your opinion?
Well, I'm one of those strange guys that believe that there are a lot of business solutions to the problems that the communities have. For example, I read some research that in society, government controls about maybe 15% of the resources, people maybe 5%, but the other 80% is controlled by businesses and corporations. They have trillions and trillions of dollars. And so if you can imagine this, let's say we're riding it's a machine, and there are 3 cogwheels, one for business, one for government, and one for people. The business cogwheel is like 5 times bigger than the other one, so you can't turn the clock. You can't turn, you know, make the machine work without everything being close to being equal. So I believe that some businesses have to give back to the community and build strong partnerships with the civic community as well as the people in order to grow together. And I don't think that there are things to be mutually exclusive, like business, government, and people are all a part of one machine, and if one element, one cogwheel is bigger than the other, then it's just going to slow down the whole thing because there are going to be misfires, there's going to be breakdowns, and that's what we're seeing now. That's why we have Trumps for president. I'm sorry, can I say that?
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm just saying that's why we have Trumps for president because you can buy presidency now. Tell me I'm wrong.
Nah, you're right.
No, you're right.
And that's why businesses need to start to find ways to give back, because if it keeps going this way, then we're going to start finding communities in which people cannot even afford to buy from the businesses that are trying to sell to them. And then business is going to fail, and it's naturally going to equal itself out one way or another. So why not be on the leading edge of it? And that's just my thoughts on it.
That's true.
That report you were talking about, I got a PDF document from the University of California. I don't know if it's what you read, but it does say the same thing.
That may be it. I think this was from Harvard, but it's close.
Yeah, the numbers are very similar to, I think it was 75 or 80% of the resources or financial something or another is controlled by businesses. The whole paradigm is interesting to me because without consumers, there are no resources for the businesses.
Exactly. Yep. And that's why I said, why not be on the leading edge? Because at some point, you're not going to have any consumers that can afford your products.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm gonna go off. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say that's why Ford just laid off like 1,400 people last week, nationwide, because Ford is starting to lose. I think JCPenney and Thomasville closed down, and other box retailers, big businesses, failing for that reason.
I will say this real quick though: the reason why we can buy an election, and this is completely off topic to businesses, but it's because people ain't handling their political responsibilities. That's all. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Mine's off topic too, because I want to just talk about the business aspect of it. Being somebody, eventually, I want to, you know, go into business for myself eventually. What emerging markets and businesses that you're seeing that are popping up that are starting to catch hold and, you know, start to be more successful? So somebody out there that's listening that wants to go into business for themselves, to fire their boss and be their own boss, what's something that, you know, you kind of seen as somewhat of an insider? You work with a lot of different people, and you get to see a lot of different things. What's some of those emerging businesses that you're seeing really take hold in the, out there in the communities that you service?
I'm seeing a lot of social enterprises start and become very successful, especially here in Tallahassee. And a social enterprise is a business that is started basically to solve a community problem, but they just offer a fee for the services. And because it has a strong social focus, people buy into it. Mm-hmm. They say, hey, look, I can pay you this money because I know that part of the money is going back into the community that I live in. That's mm-hmm. a really strong model these days, and people are actually investing in it. They're called, I didn't know this was a category until recently, but there are actually social philanthropists. Mm-hmm. There are people who invest in social enterprises just because it has a social focus. So that's a growing sector. And then another trend that I've noticed is renovation. And this is a word I made up. So when I write my book about it, it'll make sense. But it's spelled R-I-N-N-O-V-A-T-I-O-N. And that's where you take a product that was already solving a business problem and you kind of reinvent it. You re-innovate it. A good example is when you're cold, you put on a blanket. Well, now they put sleeves on a blanket. They renovated a blanket and called it a Snuggie, and people are paying $20 for it all across on TV and Walmart stores now. There are a lot of people who are taking previously developed business solutions, products, and services, and then just renovating it or reinventing it, and then offering it back to the marketplace like it's a new thing and making millions of dollars.
That's true.
Yo, I got a confession, man. I brought a Snuggie back in the day, man. Them joints were tough, man. Yo, it's as advertised, man. I could control the remote. It had pockets in it and stuff, man. I could kick my feet up. Yo, I fell asleep in that joint, man. Hey, it's just a roll backwards, but, hey, I rocked with a Snuggie.
Yeah.
Hey, you would think, why not just wear a robe?
Yeah. Hey.
Thank you for telling us that, Jamie. Great
material.
Hey,
man, I keep it real on air, man.
Hey, man, I appreciate it. Great material. You crazy. So, what are the big words that people are using and marketing is branding? Sorry about that. Branding. So, what is branding? Like, could you break down branding and why it's important for everybody to have their brand functioning in a proper manner, or that brand eye-catching, or whatever words you want to use. But why is branding totally important for businesses to be able to start up and sustain?
Yeah, absolutely. Branding is basically taking a name or a term or design or symbol that identifies a product or service, and you try to use to distinguish it from other sellers, from other people who are offering the same exact thing. But you have to distinguish it in a way to make people believe that it has more value than your competitors. And that's basically what branding is. How am I going to make Grandma believe that it's more valuable to give me a piece of the pie than give it to Joe? And a lot of times people, the first thing is first impression. When you go out on your first, when you go to your first job interview, you're going to wear your best suit, right?
Right.
It's going to be real perfect. So that first impression, that first visual presentation is important. And so that's why design is important and branding. You want to put your best foot forward. And when you come out there with something from Vistaprint or something that's all blurry and unprofessional, that's what people are going to think about you. They're going to say, hey, I'm going to get something low quality and unprofessional. And people can't help it. They are driven by what they see. And then the next thing is the experience. Once they purchase from you, what's your customer service like? Because they're going to remember it all. If it's mediocre, average, it's okay. It's all right. If people say that, if it's average, then that means someone who offers superior customer service is going to take that piece of the pie when that customer comes. So that's why the visuals, the experience, and then the relationship is also important. After you served them, you gave them good customer service, what are you going to do next? Are you going to help them with the next phase? Are you going to know, help them plan for the next step, or you want to say, hey, goodbye, I'll see you next time. A relationship brings customers back into what we call the loyalty loop. Now, I'm not sure if y'all heard this before, but the loyalty loop is when a customer buys from you, they have a good experience, and then you stay in touch with them and say, hey, look, we just got, you know, a new product that we're offering, and we're offering it exclusively at this price for our previous customers. Would you like to buy one? They want to buy it because they believe that what it has is value because of what they saw, what they experienced, and because you're building a relationship with them, they're not going to go anywhere else. In that loop, you'll continue to make money, you'll bring in referrals, bring in more people into the loyalty loop, and now you have that solid client base not going in.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep. And what you said about customer service is true, because my wife still has a BlackBerry, right?
No.
Yeah. It's embarrassing to even say it, right? It's super embarrassing. But I'm going to put myself out there to make this point, right? She still has a BlackBerry, right? It don't even taste right. And the reason she still has a BlackBerry is because I personally think she's their only customer left. Every time she calls, she gets right through. They answer her questions. Anytime she has a hiccup, which is multiple times a day, they just send her a brand new phone, probably because they have so many in stock. She gets like a new phone in the box like two or three times a week. I kid you not. But because they cater to her in such a way that makes her feel so special, probably again because she's their only customer, she refuses to leave BlackBerry. She just refuses to leave that company. Even though their phones are falling apart and the actual product itself is complete trash and garbage, she will not leave because of the customer service. I think when she's in a bad mood, she'll just call them up because they make her feel so awful.
It's funny because a lot of people are really big on loyalty. For example, I have a friend who eats at Moe's just because they say, "Welcome to Moe's" when they walk in. I personally can't stand Moe's. I would eat Chipotle at Moe's.
Right, right.
Go to Moe's just to hear him say, "Welcome to Moe's."
Now, I mean, you're correct. Olean's here in town. Yeah. I think they got some of the best food. And, you know, sometimes when you go, you know, you may have 30 minutes, but it might take 45 to get your food. But when you get your food, it's going to be worth the wait. So I don't mind going to Leola's and having to wait a little longer than they may have at some other. I mean, not Leola's, but Olean's. I don't mind going to Olean's and having to wait a little longer because the food going to be good and the dude going to fill my plate up. So I'm good.
Man, you eat at Olean's, you better have the rest of the day off.
Hey, man, hey.
That stuff will give you the itis. Boy, them grits, them grits knocked me out for like 4 hours. My bad to cut you off. Go ahead.
Yeah. But speaking of branding, and I don't mean to hog up all the questions, but it just popped in my head, and I want to make sure, because I want to ask him about this. Lonzo Ball and LaVar Ball, like, they're big baller brand. They are able, like, that's, they're basically dominating the sports headlines right now with basically the father talking, the sons play at UCLA, and then they debut the shoes and the sandals that they have. The shoes go for $400, almost $500. The sandals, I think, go for $220. If you want the signed shoe, it's $900. But Lonzo and LaVar Ball is what everybody's talking about. So, as somebody who's a marketing expert, like, how is he able to do what he's doing? And it seems like he's just some kind of regular guy. Like, do you see any or recognize any strategies or anything that he's doing that's standing out to you? Because it's just amazing how he's the most talked about thing in sports, period.
Yeah, I mean, it's branding. I hope people are paying attention because this is a really, really good lesson on branding. And I promise you this will be in somebody's textbook in 5 years. Because this man is using everything by the book. He took a regular product. I'm telling you, it's a regular shoe. If I cut it up with some scissors, it's gonna fall apart just like some Nikes or some Jordans or even some where they said some Shaqs. Mm-hmm. I know y'all remember that.
Yeah.
I had a pair of Shaqs.
Either the Reebok or the Walmart Shaq, but either
right,
one.
Right.
Oh, not the
It'll cut up just like them, but what he did, he put value on it because it came from his son's style and his brand, and because his son is worth money, because he's one of the best ballers in college league right now. People are buying it and supporting his brand, and now he can raise the price up to whatever he wants, and people are going to buy it. And the more people buy it, the more Nike or whatever company who buys the brand and licensing for it will have to pay for it. He can almost ask for more than $3 billion at this point, because if they're thinking about it, that means that they will buy more, because they would have shot it down immediately. You know what I'm saying? If they were like, this is not worth $3 billion. But
right.
The fact that he could sell them at $900 a pop, they know that they can make their money back before the buzz dies out. Because, you know, eventually it will.
That's true.
So right now, the perceived value of money that Nike sees in an investment, I think they will go for it.
Because it's like people are coming off as if the man is crazy, but I'm like, but think about it. This like 2-3 months ago, nobody. We know who LeVar. Like if you was into basketball, you knew who he was. Right. But like somebody like me, I'm not that into college basketball until like the tournament starts. So I had no idea who the guy was. I had no idea Lonzo or LeVar existed. And then next thing you know, his dad is on First Take. Not only First Take, he's on ESPN, he's on Fox Sports, he's on all these major sports shows, he's on the radio, he's on TV, he's all over the internet, and, you know, throwing in that he could beat Charles Barkley and Michael Jordan, to me, we might not agree with him, you know, as sports fans, we're going to be like, nah, LeVar, you crazy, you can't beat Jordan, but the fact that we're talking about him, like those are tactics. Those are part of the things that he had to use. So I think it's brilliant. So
hey, I think it's brilliant too. And you got to think about it. Behind it all, if you look at the most basic elements, he's a father, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's right now living every father's dream, where you have a son that goes that's capable and has the potential to go to pro ball, and has a name that everybody knows. He's going to take advantage of it, because he knows, just like every other baller, every other athlete, the buzz only lasts for a while. So he's taking advantage of it right now to secure the deal of a lifetime for his son. His son can eat forever all $3 billion. Well, if they spend it right.
Right.
My main thing with DeLonzo Ball, and we'll probably talk about this more in a later episode, is he's not selling his name. Because you look at all these major athletes, yeah, they have a brand. LeBron got issues, this, that, and the other, but it's through Nike. LeBron doesn't control everything but Nike does. So it's like him controlling his own name and controlling the ball, so to speak, behind his marketing, branding, and building a company. Man, they're going to hate the hell out of LeVar Ball and everything he's trying to do. And they're trying to vilify him in the media. Oh, this, that, and the other. He had that little interview with that little Fox News sports chick with Colin. And she baited him, set him up with some few questions, and she playing victim. But they're trying to vilify this dude for a reason. Because if I'm Nike, I'm Under Armour and all these guys. Under Armour sucks when it comes to making athlete shoes. The Steph Curry's are looking. They look like ass. Then you got this guy coming out who's a loudmouth. And people can say all they want what about the LeVar Balls, the Sun shoes. They're actually decent-looking shoes. There's some ugly-ass Jordans out there, like, and people still buy them. But these shoes are actually decent-looking. So what happens is people are like, oh, the quality, I can't buy it because it's not good quality. Well, you never tried the shoe on because your dumbass can't afford it. So people are coming up with all these different things. But I'm sitting here looking back. Now I kind of see it. LeVar Ball is somewhat of an idiot. He says some crazy shit. But I get what he's doing. You know, all publicity is good publicity, whether it's good or bad. It's got people talking about this goddamn shoe, period. And to me, now you kind of sit back and like, oh, yeah, he might say some off-the-wall stuff, but it's got you talking about his damn shoe, though.
Right. That's my point. You know, you might not like the fact I might not, even deep down inside, I do not agree that he can beat none of them people he said, but that don't have nothing to do with me thinking about him. And they actually do, because I am thinking about him. So now, in turn, I'm thinking about his son and the shoes. And I want to see what, because think about how many, when's the last time, like, a whole bunch of people were truly, truly, truly interested in not only the NBA lottery, but also the NBA draft? And it's because of this man. The NBA and ESPN owe him money.
Yeah, but ESPN know what they're doing, though. They cover this stuff because they know it's going to attract people to it. So as long as he gets attracted to it by saying something crazy every now and again, same way some people in political spectrum do say a little crazy stuff, he's creating that brand. And honestly, I thought it was hurting him at first, him saying that crazy stuff. But now it's attracting more people to hear what he got to say. And he'll have on a Big Baller Brand t-shirt, Big Baller Brand this. So anytime the camera's in front of him, he's presenting his brand. And I think a lot of people miss that part of it.
Yeah, and that's where the value is. This is something new, too, that people are talking about is social capital. The more people that are involved, the more it's worth. It has nothing to do with money, how much mm-hmm. money is in your pocket. It has to do with how many people you're connected to. And when you're connected to a lot of people, the more people you're connected to, the more your value is. And right now, what LeVar Ball is doing, he's creating social capital.
Yes. Now, see, I can follow that because I don't know who LeVar Ball is. I ain't never seen these shoes, and I didn't know people was talking about them. But I know what social capital is. So thank you for bringing it back for those of us that don't really follow sports.
And just the last thing, it's like tell the people that's hating on these LeVar Ball shoes and that whole situation, sit your simple ass down. The reason I say that is because, people are paying $300 to $500 for some Yeezys. Yeezy ain't got no damn jump shot. Like, come on. Kanye gave us two good albums, and after that, to me, all his music was trash. And he's with some Kardashian. What has Yeezy had done for you to be paying $300 to $500? All he did was create, hey, it's Yeezy. Buy my shoe. I'm going to make an album. That's it. So, before you hate on LeVar Ball and the Ball shoes and this, that, and the other, look at your feet. Jordan ain't made a jump shot since when? He's been out the league for almost 20 years, and you simple bastards are still buying them shits. So don't sit here and hate on it. Yeah, it's $495, but you add two Jordans up, and that's what you got, a LeVar Ball shoe. So
his shoes cost $400?
$495. Yeah. But $495. I get why they cost so much, though, because he's not able to mass produce right now. You know, he ain't got a little factory in China like Nike does and all these other outlets does.
So they're like boutique items.
Yeah. Uh-huh. He's selling them, he's branding them as premium, you know, like some Gucci-type athletic shoe. And I get it, because that justifies the price, you know, when you try to look at it. But
so when you buy them, do you actually wear them, or do you put them on display somewhere?
It depends. If you buy the $900 pair, you put them on display. If you buy the $400 pair, you wear them.
Yeah, but people paying $500 for Balenciagas. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but people paying $500 for it. I don't even know who Balenciaga is. Is that a first name? Is it a last name?
Is
it French? I don't know. It's a $500 shoe.
That's what they say. I don't know. Anyway.
They ugly. That's all I know.
Forget them. Support the Big Baller Brand. So, I want to get to this.
You got any shoes?
I got two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't have no Wyatt yet.
No, I mean, like, are you selling any shoes since we're talking about it?
Nope.
Oh.
Shoes. We need to come
you
up.
You can sell shoes for $1,000. I might go make some paper mache joints.
Hey, man, you know.
And just to parallel this before we go off this topic. Okay. Slippers.
I'm gonna say it's luxury. You just walk around the house because you're so rich in these slippers.
I know, right?
And my final spill on this thing is a lot like, look at the diamond. A diamond. Okay, everybody knows what diamonds are, right? And they say, oh, they're so rare, and that's what justifies the price. And you know, you get married, you gotta buy an engagement ring that's at least a month's salary. Who created this value of a diamond?
The people who control it.
De Beers and all these bastards. They found some little clear stuff in the ground and had to figure out how they can sell it to people. And they what? They created. They made a brand. Hey, these are rare crystals in the ground. Oh, my God. These, man, diamonds ain't shit but some fucking, like, yo, but we, like, I get mad at this argument because.
You the angry man.
Because we give diamonds value. Like, the company sold us a dream that diamonds are these rare things, this, this, that, and the other. How in the hell they rare and everybody got them? Diamonds are not rare. Everybody has them, but the way it's branded to us, the way it's marketed out there, it's like you're in a new social class if you got this diamond, S class, G class. You can make a diamond now that's damn flawless. That's what they don't tell you either.
But see, that's the like we're saying, in a nutshell, that's the power of branding. That's the power of marketing to make people believe what you say about a product. Like, you give the value to the product, and they'll believe it depending on how you present it to them.
Man, and fuck the beers, by the way.
So
there are two ways to. There are two prices to a product. You know, there's the actual utility of the product. That's the real price of it, and then there's the social construct of it. And that's what he talked about earlier when he talked about social capital.
Right.
You can't manipulate utility, but you can manipulate how society views your product. And that's, you know, like, in theory, nobody should pay $900 for shoes because can get them for 20 cents. If you
They're made for, like, $3 in China somewhere. That's the sad part.
In theory. Right. But, you know, and it's the same with, like, everything we do. Like, in theory, nobody should spend $600 on a cell phone when you can go and buy it. They're not made for that much. They don't cost that much to make, but like we talked about the iPhone earlier, nobody should be spending $500-$600 every year on the same damn phone with a new voice for the automation system. But motherfuckers do it because
yo, Pat about to get a Cricket Metro PCS phone here after the show. Watch what I tell you, man.
I done had this Galaxy Note 2 for the last 4 years. It still work.
Pat about to get a trap phone, man.
I think what frustrates me or gives me some heartburn is that when people pay $900 for some shoes, but there are 12-year-olds selling shoes for $15, and 10 of those dollars go to Africa to buy shoes for other people. You have brands out there like that, and they don't support them.
Uh-huh.
But on the other end, you know, I got an iPhone 7, but had only pay like $7 a month for it, so I think I'm good.
Hey, yeah, you winning that.
People want to feel good about themselves. Honestly, I think that is a pretty big part of marketing, making people feel good about purchasing your product having that social class. Like, oh, I gotta, like, I get people, I don't know, like, people still trip over cars. I give a shit about what I drive at this age. I got 2 kids, I'm married. I can, as long as that motherfucker get me to and fro, I can give a fuck. But, you know, people, I drive a Benz, so I feel like I'm this. It's like, yo, man, that shit was created.
Marketing.
They created that value, so you can go around and feel like you're better than somebody when actually you really aren't. You can barely afford a car note, and you don't even own your own house. But who the fuck am I, right?
Back me up on this, Brian. Nah. Purchasing decisions are, for most people, an emotional decision. Is that right? That's right?
100, yep.
See, the guest backing me up because he's the expert. So if you can manipulate people's emotions, you can get them to make purchases that they otherwise wouldn't make unless they the mean old man down the street who get mad. He don't want to pay the little kid $5 to cut his grass, so he cut his own grass and steal the money from the little kids in the neighborhood. That guy's a prick.
Hey, I do that, so you can kiss my ass, Pat.
And Pat, what you're talking about is the golden circle, man. There used to be a time when people would buy your product because of what it was, because it was the only thing that was offering that particular product.
Uh-huh.
But now people buy into why you believe that this product is going to benefit them. So if you can make people believe what you believe, make them feel it, then they're going to buy it. Not because they think it's worth it, but they're going to buy it because they believe what you said about it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I got a question. Multi-level marketing. Is multi-level marketing something that's good, trustworthy, or proven and effective? And how are you able to distinguish between something that's legitimate within the multi-level marketing realm or something that's a scam?
I would say there are two things that can tell you if it's a scam or if it's worth it. And that's one, the upfront investment.
Okay.
And two, the return on your investment. If those two are unfavorable, so if you've got to, like, be late on your phone bill to make the
right
upfront investment to buy into it, you probably shouldn't do it. And if you only get about $4 or $5 per, you know, return, it's probably not worth it. You're probably better off starting your own business, investing your own money into doing your own your idea, and that way when you start to get the returns, you don't have to share it with anybody.
That's the same reason why I stopped messing with Amway. I was into it, and you had to pay $300 a month to be in it, plus sell the products. And I was like, wait, hold up. If I pay myself $300 a month, what you think will happen instead of paying them? So, you
right.
know, I get it.
I'm not a fan.
And I used to do MCA back in the day, and I made a lot off of it. But it got to a point where it almost felt like slavery, man. And I know that's an extreme example, but I'm making somebody else rich
uh-huh.
the hard work I'm doing, and I'm getting pennies on a dollar.
Fucking pennies.
Right.
Yo, okay, hold on. Time out. I'm going to go off topic here for 1 second. Excuse me. I'm the angry guy on the show.
Here you go.
But I see, you probably see this all the time. People selling, you know, the milk. What's that joint called? The the protein shake joints.
Talking about the Herbalife.
Yeah, Herbalife. You got the girls selling flat tummy tea on the internet. The little strap up bra. Are these pyramid schemes? And what should people know about pyramid schemes before they go in and just thinking, oh, all I can do is sell some protein shakes and I'm gonna be rich? Like, what would you say to those people so they can get the hell off my timeline with that bullshit?
I would say if you can't get the same thing by just going to the gym and eating healthy, then this magic pill is not going to work for you either.
Right.
Because you have to sustain it over there a period of time, which brings them more money.
There you go. So you can have a flat tummy tea for, you know, 6 months, and then when you can't afford it no more, you go back to the 40-pack that you had. You just wasted your money when you could have invested that into a gym membership.
True.
You
True.
Know what? I'll tell you because I'm going to be honest. Pyramid schemes and MLMs is something I looked into heavy because when I was in the military, I made a good chunk of money off Ponzi's, pyramids, MLMs, and everything else. All
right, Madoff. Look at this guy.
No, I'm going to be honest. When I first got into it, I was so naive, right? I thought everybody was doing good. I didn't realize that I had lucked into finding these programs at their early stages of development when the world was wide open, not realizing that the longer these programs go on, the less likely the people that get in are to make any money.
Right.
So, you know, like when I was doing Quickstar, I think Quickstar had only been around for maybe like 2 or 3 months. When I got into Quickstar, the world was wide open. And it wasn't until, and even with auto surfing, back when auto surfing was doing this thing before it, the government cracked down on that and shut that whole industry down. You know, it wasn't until I got people involved and I was like, yeah, go ahead and invest, $3,000 or $4,000 in and you'll get it back. And guys were taking money out of their savings accounts and then getting burned on it. That I realized, wait a second, and at that point I actually stopped and went and looked into it and found out that 1%, I think the number is 1% of the people that get involved in an MLM or a Ponzi pyramid or any of those structured businesses are likely to make any real profit from them. And the number gets less, it shrinks even further if you're talking about being able to live off of those models. So, there's a reason why pyramids and Ponzi's are illegal.
But here's the thing.
Parallels with that.
Go ahead.
Parallels with the current society in America, where the top 1% are the richest in America. It's the same thing as the Ponzi and multi-level marketing schemes. They're just basically taking the same model, but just reinventing it over and over again for different business models. And people are buying into it like it's new, but it's not. America's been doing this since, what, 1800s. So
right.
They came out with sort of their sales on motor oil or whatever it was back then.
Is that in the same realm of, you know, when you scrolling through like Facebook, particularly, and the people are saying, hey, you give me $100 and then I send you $1,000. You see it a lot, or somebody flash like, look at all this money I got from doing the ads and all these different things. Like, are these things, I know the first one I said to me, like, that's just common sense, because some girl was like, hey, send me $100. And I was like, well, if I send you the money, well, what's going to happen? Well, I'm going to give it to my cousin, and my cousin is going to send you $1,000. So my next question was, well, why does my 100 turn to 1,000? Like, how does that happen? What's the process? Like, what would make that 100 into 1,000? So, like, it just is. Like, it ain't no just is. Like, it's a process that has to happen. So, could you kind of give us some light on some of these things and to help people understand why, if some of them real, some of them fake, like, what the hell is this?
If you don't have nothing on paper, don't trust it.
Right.
And that's especially the Facebook social media things. There was this one, I forgot, it was like a blessing circle that was out. I can't remember. And they were using church people.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if you go into this, God's going to bless you with like 10 times as much if you get 10 other people to do it. And all they were doing was putting money in the pot and then paying the first person mm-hmm. the return. And then as the 20th and 50th person came in, they will pay each person successively. It was some big scheme, and then it eventually got shut down by Facebook, and people couldn't post those images anymore about a blessing circle. It's the same kind of thing. If you don't have nothing on paper that said, hey, look, I'm going to give you a return on your investment of this much, it ain't real. And I'm telling you, this is one of the reasons why you're better off being self-made.
Good. I'm sorry, my bad, Pat, not to cut you off. Could you say that last part one more time?
You're better off being self-made.
Yes, sir.
Because the truth of it is, if an organization pays out its current members from the income it receives by new members, it is illegal. That's a pyramid or a Ponzi, depending on how it's set up. And that's illegal. And it's illegal for a reason. It's illegal because once the market reaches a certain level of saturation, everybody that pays in after that point is going to lose money.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
But I don't understand why. So everybody, but that's where we go back to the emotional piece that you guys were talking about earlier. People get so emotionally attached to the idea of making money that they either aren't looking at the big picture, the long-term picture, or they just don't care about all the people that they're fucking so that they can gain the extra $10.
But the one thing about that, Pat, you know, everybody, you know, people want to make more money. And you probably, and everybody probably rated this, you heard on the radio, oh, the Flip This House people come on, this is Thayer Merrill with A&E, blah,
yeah,
blah, blah.
They come to everybody and say it.
I'll be honest with you. I went to one of those seminars just to see what it was about, man. All it does is they set you up to buy their product that is $10,000, $15,000, and $20,000. That's all that thing is. And it's not guaranteed. You don't get anything on paper, like Brian said earlier. And what people really want when they hear these, you know, hey, sell these protein shakes, sell this, that, and the other, they're trying to get that get rich quick, instead of, like you said, you know, sometimes you got to put in that work to make a business work. Now, I ain't saying you can't go around and sell, you know, protein shakes, this, that, and the other, but if you're just trying to do it because it's part of a pyramid scheme, then you're going to fail. Now, if you're doing it, then you setting up your own business, you got your own shop, now you can build a clientele and people come to you for supplements. I understand that, But that get-rich-quick thing, I think that's what traps a lot of people into these Ponzi schemes and all this other nonsense. And I think the real estate one, that's a huge one, because you could get into that and lose your whole goddamn, your whole life, you know what I'm saying, in general. So people just got to be careful. That's all.
Right. Right. Well, just one, before we get to our last most famous question, I just want to you kind of elaborate on something for people who are starting their own businesses so they can have a realistic perspective. About, like, can you elaborate on how building a real solid business that will stand the test of time, how these things don't just pop up overnight, how it takes time and dedication and all the other great things that you have to put into your business, coming from somebody who was able to build your business over time and you were able to sustain yourself with your business?
Yeah, absolutely. It takes a lot of patience, man. In fact, the current standard now is 3 to 5 years. You'll mm-hmm. know if this is going to succeed or fail. But most small businesses and micro enterprises will fail in the first 3 to 6 months. And it's because they didn't go through the business development process the right way. And the reason is because there are a lot of people out here who believe in the get rich quick, that, hey, if I don't get rich off the first 3 to 6 months, then that means that this thing isn't going to work. Well, no, that's not the case. It's supposed to be 3 to 5 years, because you have to go through year one, review your plan, find out what worked, what didn't work, try something different in year two. And at the end of year two, you look back and say, hey, did the changes that I make actually have an impact? Was it a positive or a negative impact? And if it was negative, then this is my next year. I'm going to do it, you know, I'm going to take my lessons learned from year one and two and apply it in year three, and this time I got it right.
Okay.
And when we can't get out of that temporary, that immediate gratification desire in us, we're never going to see year 3 to 5. We're going to see, you know, three and month five, and mm-hmm. go back to working at McDonald's afterwards.
Right. Okay. Right. So set realistic goals, please. And if you need help setting realistic goals, you can go to beeasygraphics.com. And, you know, you can get some information on learning how to set realistic goals and be able to plan yourself out, because I'm telling you, his organization is great. All right, so this is our world-famous question. We ask every guest this question because we like to get the answers. So this is Patrick's question, and we kind of set it up a little bit like this.
So, if you were the all-powerful ruler, czar, you know what I'm saying, of Black America, of Black America, what would you change, and what would your message to the people be?
My message would be make yourself. Make yourself. A lot of people out here to make money, but they ain't have themselves together. They don't have the discipline. They don't have the character. They don't have the experience. Make yourself. And a lot of people have this entitlement attitude that, hey, well, my people went through 400 years of slavery. You got to hand out some stuff to me. You got to give it to me. You got to make some concessions. You got to cut me a break. Give me a discount. Nope. You got to make yourself.
There you go.
That would be my...
So what would you change?
What would I change? I would change the minimum wage, man. I would change the minimum wage to a living wage. I'd get everybody $15 an hour if I could, you know, because I believe that if people have enough to at least cover the basics, daily living expenses, then they can really start having some peace of mind and innovating the next level, the next big idea for society. And if people spend more time creating than they do breaking down each other in order to get by and make the next penny that they're missing, society is so much greater.
Cool. That's what's up. So before we close this out, can you let the people know what your website is? We can say your website again, or any other website that you have. How can people contact you on social media, email, all those things? How can people find you?
Yes, sir. Well, they can start on Google. Just Google Be Easy Graphics, and you'll find everything you know about us. And that's B as in boy, E as in echo, Z as in Zulu, and then graphics with an X instead of CS. That's the best way to find us. But, of course, you can go to b-easygraphics.com, or you can look me up, Brian Keith Wyatt Jr. On Facebook, or brianwyattjr.com on my website.
Hey, cool. And want to say thank you, because we really appreciate you giving real information about marketing, real information about business, real information to that people can practically use. Like, you didn't come up and give us no fluff, none of that roundabout, run-of-the-mill stuff that people can get in these crappy books and some of the things, but you're giving people real information from tried and true methods that have helped you and other businesses succeed. And if you like my new logo, that's because Be Easy Graphics hooked me up with that new logo, and I'll be working with Be Easy Graphics moving forward in the future to help build on the Souls of Giants brand. I'm satisfied. A lot of other people satisfied. So you're going to be satisfied as well. So remember, B-EasyGraphics, GRAPHIX.com, and they'll take care of all your marketing needs and make you fly as fly as you want to be. So Brian, thank you for coming on the train, and we definitely got to have you back in the future to give us more information and more tips on how we can get better at branding ourselves and entrepreneurship and all these other things that we need to do as a community.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Appreciate it, and speak to you soon.
Yes, sir. Have a good night.
You too. Yeah. Jamie.
What's happening?
I'm going to get you some prune juice.
What's that, man?
You need to let that shit go.
I ain't letting shit go. I'm compensated for life, baby.
Hey, that Napoleon complex kicked in, huh?
Hey, man. I'm letting that shit go for life.
Hey, you hate the... Hey, if you ever meet somebody with last name De Beers, you're going to swing on their ass, ain't you?
Nah, man, because I researched that for myself, and people should. Why do we give so much value to diamonds? And as I was reading, if you look at, you know, civilizations back in antiquity and all that good stuff, they weren't rushing to go get diamonds and stuff. It was emeralds, you know, stuff that had color to it. But diamonds, the value we give to diamonds was created by people who found these rocks and was like, yo, we could sell these. We just got to find a way to flip it. And that's how you get the diamond ring. So, I don't know, man. I'm married. Yeah, I brought one my damn self from my wife. And, you know, glad she got it. But, man, we got conned into diamonds. They're not rare. They're not this. You can make a diamond in a laboratory that's absolutely flawless. But now in the diamond industry, they make a distinction. Oh, this was from the ground and this one was made in the lab. Either way, nobody will fucking tell if you put it in your goddamn ear or around your chain. You think all these rappers got these? No, goddamn it! You know these rappers, all this jewelry ain't real. Half
right,
that shit is manufactured
diamonds.
All I'm saying.
All cladded.
Fuck De Beers. That's my. No. I mean, you just think about if De Beers didn't exist and diamonds still had the same value. A lot of countries in Africa would probably be ruling the world right now and shit like that. So, give or take, do your fucking research.
But he's right, though. I mean, that's something me and my wife had a discussion about right around the time I asked her to marry me, was that, you know, I wasn't feeling, because there's a, like, well, one, diamonds are already overpriced, and you can watch plenty of documentaries at this point on minerals, rocks, and gems and things like that, and they'll openly tell you that diamonds are not rare. They're not the most precious stones that the earth produces. They're not the most valuable stones that the earth produces. They do have the most utility as far as their hardness.
Yeah.
But in terms of beauty and rarity and all these other qualities, no. But we had that discussion right around the time I was getting ready to ask her to marry me about diamonds, and you know, it was a wonderful discussion, because she realized where I was coming from. I realized where she was coming from, and she wasn't the type of girl that really cared a whole lot about stones and shit like that. So it worked out. But, there, you know, even to that, like, because not only have they taken diamonds and overpriced those, but then when it comes to even weddings themselves, now they got this whole separate industry where when they attach wedding to something, that adds like $1,000, $2,000,
$3,000. Because they got these damn people programmed since Disney. So
it's marketing.
You got that, and then you got this Bridezilla and Say Yes to the Dress and all these other ideas about marriage. And if you're a woman, you 35, you ain't been married, they act like you ain't gonna never be married again, and all these crazy things. So it's the whole marketing aspect that put around the wedding, and then wedding season. Motherfucker, you get married when you want to. To my goddamn wedding season. What the hell?
I'm telling people right now, if you research the Beers and the things they did and how they robbed the continent of Africa, you'll understand why, like, you should have a deep disdain towards that particular company, brand, whatever the case may be. But what they did was just a brilliant marketing scheme that has worked. You look days back in America, a diamond engagement ring wasn't popular until they came out and wanted to push that product. Before then, you just get two bands. It wasn't a big deal that you had to spend a month's salary on a engagement ring. And even to Pat's point, I know people going into debt for a wedding. Don't have a house, don't have this, that. Motherfucker, you got to be about. I'm sorry. Personally.
No, you are right, though. You are absolutely correct. No, that's for real.
You think about a lot of people who get married, this, this, and other. Some of them probably got student loan debt, shit that really needs to be attended to. They don't even own their own home, but they're going in debt about a wedding. Now, I'm not saying weddings are ordinary, this, this, that, and other. But, again, keep it in perspective. Do what's in your limits. Don't go broke for a wedding. Like,
now, if you want to be really real and technically real, if you don't take your ass to the courthouse and file those papers, your ass ain't married. You just had a big ass party. So that's really, because all that is just a celebration and the ceremony. But for real though, because if you don't go register at the courthouse and y'all don't do y'all business at the courthouse, y'all not legally married. So that's the party. And so it's like. But once again, that comes back to us being lulled to sleep by this American dream that we keep trying to fit ourselves in. And I keep telling people the American dream is a black person's worst nightmare.
Well, the American dream doesn't exist. If you do any real research on it, you'll find out that almost every component of what we think the American dream is doesn't exist and has never existed for the vast majority of Americans. Like, so it does it all the way down to the white picket fence, the dog, the two kids, and the two parent households, and like that shit has never existed like that for any Americans, not even just black Americans, white ones too. Like that shit has never.
But it's marketing. You got people in this country, you can even look at the political spectrum of this, that believe if you just work hard enough, if you just do things the right way, you'll make it. That's bullshit.
That's what Dez Bryant ass said.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
Out of all the people.
Yeah, that is such bullshit, people. Like, everybody's not meant to make it to the top. Can we? Absolutely. But it would have to change the status quo completely. Meaning the people at the top will be equal to us. So, no, that's not going to change. Everybody's not meant to be in that top 1%, this, this, that, and other. But they give you that illusion, like, hey, if you just work hard enough, hey, you don't need fucking health care. Just go out there and fucking die, Johnny. Work hard. Get some black lungs from working in coal mine. You'll be all right, but you're going to live the fucking American dream. Yeah. That shit does not exist, people. Stop falling for that shit. That is marketing. They keep your dumb ass lulled to sleep to keep you buying the same bullshit we always buy. Buying this, oh, I got to have this. I got to have this or it isn't complete. All that materialism, I wish people would get back to it and realize a lot of this stuff is just marketing. I read an article. I'm going to get off my soapbox here in a second. Cereal. Anybody been down a cereal aisle? Have y'all seen what cereal boxes look like?
They're all bright and shiny and colorful and captivating and eye-catching with big letters.
So I was reading an article, and I'll quote it. I'll find it that way, and people don't fucking call me out on bullshit. But even the images of the characters on these cartoon boxes, they're all designed to market to who? Children. You ever notice some of these things got these big eyes and they're looking down? They got big eyes and they're looking down. Who you think they're looking down to? Children who are walking down these aisles with their parents. These ain't made for adults. Like, nobody gives a fuck about a leprechaun on a box talking about some Lucky Charm. But kids love that shit, and that's who they market to. So everything, the way we consume stuff, is based on somebody selling us something. And people got to understand that. That's why I think him giving, Brian, the guest, giving a lot of information about marketing, people realize, like, yo, I'm just buying this shit because the box looks good. Not because I need it, not because it's vital to my life, because I fell for it.
I know, you know, people may say this, and, you know, we blessed to have great guests, but Brian dropped a lot of jewels in his interview. So you make sure you write down the stuff that Brian is saying in his interview, especially if you're an entrepreneur, you have a product or service that you're trying to push or sell. You know, he gave a lot of good information on what you need to do to be successful. And like I said, this is not just coming from somebody who's doing stuff in theory. Because one thing I hate, and I would never have on, and we'll never have on this show, is somebody who is trying to tell us or sound as if they're an expert on the topic when they have no real experience in it. That's one thing I don't like, because I see it a lot. But I know Brian has a lot of real experience in what he's saying. And in his bio, it said, you know, he's helped over 12,000 businesses. So we talking about real tried and true experiences, and his brand is trusted because of the quality that they do. And my logo fire, so, you know. But,
and you know what? To go back to this marriage thing real quick. Nah, but real quick. You know, it's interesting because when last time I logged on to Facebook and went to this relationship group that I was in just to see how single people acting, you know, we came across this post where people was talking about if a man can't pay for your wedding and get you a ring that's worth 3 months' salary, then he shouldn't, blah, blah, blah. And it got me to thinking, you know, back in the days, a man got paid for marrying you. It's called
a dowry. Right, dowry. Yeah.
You know, like, he didn't have to pay out.
But that's not even back in the day. That's outside of American culture.
Well, but see, you can't talk about other cultures because then they say that's another culture. So I just say back in the day, because this wasn't that long ago, like 100 years ago, that this was happening in America, where I got paid to marry you, not the other way around. Like, I wasn't paying people to marry you. I got paid to marry you. And if you didn't have a satisfactory payment for me, we didn't get married.
I want my two goats, I want my pigs, and my cows. If you ain't got my shit, we ain't getting married.
You know what I'm saying? Your daddy paid for the festival, and he paid me to marry you, to take you off his hands, basically. So like, the whole script then flipped. And now, you know, like, it's so interesting because I think, like, that was like 100 years ago. That, like, that wasn't that long ago. Like I have great-great-grandmothers that all the way up until maybe less than 5 years ago that were still alive, that their husbands were actually paid a dowry to marry them. I mean, it's crazy.
But that's the thing. A lot of people, because we buy into stuff, you know, that's how it's marketed to us, that's how it's sold to us, we just accept that. And as we have assimilated to American culture, to trying to attain this American dream, we just sign off and kind of just buy off on these things and say, oh, that's the way you got to spend 3 months' salary on a diamond ring, or you don't deserve me. Like, my thing is, and I know, and I'm not, like, trust me, I've had this conversation. I know, you know, that gesture, that symbolic, you know, ring and all that. I get it. But if a man ain't got a place where he can take you back to, he ain't got a way he can provide this, that, and other, but he
you
can show
you. Shouldn't even want him to show you what's on no ring. If you ain't got no home to go back to, if you don't have no real solid foundation, you shouldn't even want that. Like, y'all should be planning to be a. Matter of fact, leading up to the wedding, y'all should have already had this talk. Like, y'all should have been having this talk often and working out financial plans.
But that's where you run into the people that say, well, if he can't afford then he can't afford to be. That's where I get into, what happened to building together? Like, what happened to, like, what? It ain't about, now, I'm not saying a man is dead broke is ready to be married. I'm not saying he not either. What I'm saying is, what happened to two people getting together, neither one of them being where they want to be, and building with each other to get where they, like, what happened if I come into the relationship and I'm already where I'm at and you not?
Then what use do I have for you?
Right. Why am I, what's the point? You know, and to that point, if I'm already where I want to be, what's the point? And, like, for a lot of people, what's the point in a relationship, period, if I'm already exactly where I want to be in life? Hey, like, man. Like, what's the point?
I'm gonna tell you, like, I'm about to say some ignorant shit, but oh well. Hey, man, God is making the perfect person for those people, Pat. So you just need to shut the fuck up and let God work his farmersonly.com skills. That way they don't have to change the fuck shit in their life. They're just going to get a perfect person except all the fuck shit they got going on.
Right.
That's how people see relationships.
And those
God's
going to
fix all of them.
Those are the people that never get married.
And they're still single, right. And they're on my news feed and Facebook as we speak.
Hey, man, you know.
Go fuck me, right?
Hey, you know how it go. But, man, hey, y'all know how it go on the Freedom Train. We bring good guests, we have good conversations, and we feel good, we vibe good, and everything is good because we're working to make sure our community is in great shape. Appreciate Brian Wyatt Jr. for coming on the show again. Remember, go to his website, b.easy, B, the letter B, dash, I mean, not B dot, but B, the letter B, dash, the letter E, the letter Z, graphics, graphix.com. And learn more about his company. He's Patrick Irvin. He's Jamie Basham. I'm Joseph Ward. And together, we save the earth. But we don't make Captain Planet, but we save the earth. But enough of that. Two fingers up like a player. Peace. You can rap now, Pat. Go ahead.
Chill. Okay.
Get him.
Turn me up in my headphones.
Ooh, that's hot. Say it again, son.
Turn me up, baby.
What? Y'all heard that?
Chicken noodle soup with a baseball bat.
Hey, 2 miles an hour.
So everybody sees me.